Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a X-Men Tuesday episode. It's also a part of our 12 days of the Comic Source. Today, I'm going to be talking about Prisoner X number 2. It's from writer Vita Ayala. The art is by Herman Peralta, colors by Mike Spicer, and letters by Joe Sabino. So if you remember, Prisoner X is Lucas Bishop. We saw in Marvelous X-Men how he broke the law basically by having intimate relations with Jean Grey. And so he was taken to the Danger Room prison complex because he had, you know, made that mistake multiple times. He had committed that crime multiple times. And so you go there and you're supposed to be, you know, reevaluated and rehabilitated. So he recognized some of the prisoners that were there, Hank McCoy, Gabby Kinney or Honey Badger, as she's known, Polaris. And there were a few that seemed to remember how things were before, Danielle Moonstar, Polaris, but most didn't. And then he was having a hard time. What's real? What's not? Where are these visions coming from? And then he got a mysterious note under his cell door saying, "The dream is real. Reality is false. Get out." And doesn't really know what to make of it. So that's kind of where we start this story. And we're in the warden's office. And the warden, I think it's Forge. I can't remember, to be honest with you, but it looks like Forge. He's talking to Psylocke, who is kind of a high-ranking official in the Department of X, the law enforcement agency in the Age of X-Men. And he's saying, despite some troubles, Lucas Bishop hasn't shown any aggression toward the staff. It's making me hopeful for his eventual rehabilitation, Psylocke. And she says, well, Bishop's relationship not only broke the rules, it set a dangerous example and a precedent. You know, here he is supposed to be one of the best and brightest. He's supposed to be one of the X-Men. And he keeps breaking the rules repeatedly. So she said he had to be removed for the safety of everyone. And the warden says, well, I still don't see how that puts him beyond redemption. And Psylocke's not ready to commit. She says, well, at least you watching the inmates when they're least on their guard to monitor their progress is brilliant. And I'm not opposed to discussing your observations with the rest of Department X, because maybe it'll do some good in terms of prevention. We'll know what to look for. But that isn't why you're here. And that's not what this institution is for. You know, it's not to solve those types of problems. And the warden agrees. And she says, you do important work here. Have you forgotten that? And he says, no, of course not. My work is my life. And, you know, I'm here to serve the needs of the whole by sheltering those who are unfit to partake in the great harmony of life. So, you know, extremely fascist. They're not here to rehabilitate people. They're not here to make people fit to go back out into society. They're just here to trap them forever, to keep them from ruining what they think is utopia, but is really just a fascist nightmare. So the warden goes on to say, I understand that my ideas are an indulgence, and I'm grateful to try to alleviate any of the suffering of my charges, but you know, I'm gonna do my job. And so Psylocke, as she leaves, say, remember that Lucas Bishop, he chose a life that stands for everything that our science society is against. You know, he's smart, and maybe he's just trying to lull you into a false sense of security. So don't fall for that. So once she leaves, the warden takes out Bishop's file. He makes some notes in it and then starts watching him on camera. And we see Bishop out in the yard, and he's going around trying to figure out who wrote the note. So he's trying to show it to people, but they don't want anything to do with him. You got to remember, a lot of these people are in this prison because Bishop and the X-Men put him there. So, you know, he's not exactly well-liked. And later on, he's in the common room and he's talking to Polaris, and he's getting sort of the same treatment. She's holding her hands in, and he's wondering about that. He's wondering why she's flipping the pages of the book with her nose that she's reading. And she just says, don't take for granted all the abilities you have. And Bishop's like, look, I'm just trying to find out who slipped me this note. Okay. And she says, good. Good to see your fall from grace hasn't tempered your cruelty. And he's like, wait, what? What is your problem? And Honey Badger reminds Bishop, well, you know, it could be the whole you being responsible for her being here thing. And Bishop's like, wait, what? Like, come on. Everyone knows the X-Men were the ones that brought Polaris down. you're the ones that, that, you know, sent her here. And you took her down so hard that she lost half her marbles. And Bishop's like, what are you talking about? I've never met her before. That's not even possible. And Gabby's like, yeah, of course it is. I remember that day. And that's why she walks around like that. She's convinced she's in a straitjacket all the time because somebody told her that when she woke up from getting her ass whooped. And it might have been me, but, you know, in all fairness, I didn't think she'd actually believe me. So Bishop's just, he's at a loss. He's like, you know, supposedly there's these memories, these things that happened, and I don't remember them. And so he goes to talk to Beast, who seems to have the pulse of the place, but he's also very, I'll say, very antisocial. And right off the bat, you know, Bishop gets like half a sentence out, and Beast turns around and punches him in the gut. Says, once again, I get wind of you irritating some of my people. And once again, I feel the need to make my stance clear regarding that. And Bishop's like, dude, I'm not looking for trouble. Stop fighting me. And B says, well, you came to the wrong place for that. And they kind of fight back and forth for a little while. And, you know, Bishop keeps barking orders for Beast to stop attacking. And Beast reminds him, well, what you're failing to grasp is you no longer have any authority. You're not on the outside. In fact, you're pretty much the bottom of the food chain here. And again, Bishop takes him down, tries to call the end of the fight. Beast isn't having it, takes Bishop down again. And, you know, Bishop just kind of lays there and he's thinking, is this all there is? Is this really who you are, McCoy, who we are? We're just going to always fight. There's nothing better. And B says, well, what else do you think there is? And Bishop's kind of despondent. And he says, well, there's got to be something more than this. Otherwise, what's the point? And B says, you know, if you're looking for meaning in the world, you'll be sorely disappointed. You know, meaning may be likened to intentions, you know, whether those are personal or driven by something internal that others can't see. You've come to hell, right? And your road could have been paved with the grandest of intentions, but we all know who you are and what you represent. You know, you were one of the X-Men. You put a lot of people here. So don't expect anybody to be nice to you or even civil. And Beast picks up the note that Bishop dropped, the one that got slipped under his door, and says, the person you seek is not me. And I don't even know who this handwriting is from. So Bishop's kind of surprised. He's like, well, why are you helping me? And Beast says, well, you know, this place is built on a foundation of struggle. It's like quicksand, greedy and heavy. They want to see the rule of strength and dominance. So that's what I give them so that I can survive. And we both know I could tear you apart like cheap paper if I wanted to. And it cost me nothing to find out how far you're willing to go to survive to win. So what you need to do is stop asking your questions so loudly, or the wrong people are going to answer them. And Bishop says, right, thanks for the concern, I guess. I mean, it's actually good advice when you think about it. And I think it all stems from, you know, who Bishop is and who he had been in this world prior to going to this prison, because he was used to being able to ask questions and get answers as opposed to needing to sneak around. He's too direct. That's just who he is. So meanwhile, he goes to talk to Danny Moonstar, and he's telling her about how inconsistent his memories are. He's like, I remember things that never happened, and then people are telling me the things that did happen. And I don't know, people and places are familiar, but they're also strangers. I don't know what to believe. And then there's this note that somebody slipped me, you know, the dream is real, the reality false, get out. So Danny, she's looking at the note and she says, I'm sorry, I don't know who wrote this. Even looking at it gives me chills. You know, the world you speak about, I think I remember it too, because this was the one that feels like a dream, or to be more precise, kind of like a nightmare, actually, or a sick fairy tale. And there's something here, and it's affecting us. You know, there's something here in this prison. It fills our mind with these ideas. And, you know, sometimes I look away and I start to remember the truth, and then it's all gets swept away. You know, things were different. We were different. There was a world, there was family, friendships, love. And, you know, I remember Nate Gray, but not the way everyone else seems to. I remember a life bishop that was different than this. And I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if what we're doing now is being judged for how we led that life. And Bishop says, you know, it's not much of a comfort, but I doubt that. There's too much narrative going on right here. There's too much detail for this to be anything but real life. But maybe you're right. There is something about this place that's off. And he keeps hearing laughter in the background. And he's like, whoa, do you hear that? I can't get away from this damn laughter. And we see a girl come down the stairs from one of the upper tiers where Danny and Bishop are talking. And she says, fancy seeing you here, Lucas. And it looks kind of like Bishop's sister, actually. And he says, you again, who are you? And Danny's like, I can't be here. I got to go. So she leaves and Bishop keeps hearing the laughter. And the girl says, was it something I said? Meanwhile, in the warden's office, we see this, looks like one of the guards, but he doesn't have any features. He doesn't have a face. And he walks in, stands in front of the warden's desk, and the warden says, do it. And so he leaves. Meanwhile, Bishop and the girl are talking, and she says, look, I don't know what history you have with Danny, but you're going to leave her alone. And the girl's like, wait, really? This is how it is? You're going to come in here and you're going to start making decrees? Well, at least you're consistent that way. And she grabs the note from him, and he's like, what, how did you take that from me? And you know, because it was in his pocket. She didn't even know that she had taken it. And she says, you know, it's kind of an unexpected twist of events. You know, I don't know who left this for you, considering I know everything about this place. That's pretty impressive. This is one of the rare instances where my attention was diverted elsewhere. But whoever left this for you, it's not going to make any difference. We got our eye on you, and there's no hiding from that. And he says, Bishop, who the hell is we? Who are you? Why do we have the same mark on our face? And she says, it's not the time for questions, Lucas. And all of a sudden, we see a different version of Bishop. And that version punches him and starts beating the crap out of him. And this is like the version, you know, that first showed up back in X-Men 289, you know, wearing that XSE costume, the red bandana around his throat. And, you know, Bishop's looking at him going, wait, who are you? Why do you look like me? And before he can get any answers, there's another version of Bishop that attacks him. He's trying to fight that version off. And Bishop says, I'm getting kind of tired of this, kind of tired of being attacked, tired of being outnumbered. Who are you people? What's happening here? And then we see another version of Bishop, this one more futuristic with, I don't know, metal gloves or even a metal arm. And the real Bishop says, well, this is getting out of hand. And the guy that has the metal arm is like, you trying to be funny, right? Because he's got that fake arm. And Bishop is telling himself, this can't be real. There can't be four other versions of me attacking me right now. And one of them says, well, it's real enough. And then all of a sudden, he's not even in the prison anymore. The walls are ripped away by some kind of force or gale force wind. And they're left standing on what looks like a hunk of asteroid or something out in space. And now there's five different versions of Bishop that are attacking him, that are chokeholding him, and eventually he blacks out. And on the last page of the issue, we see two of the guards that had the blank faces, the blank heads, and they're carrying Bishop into his cell and putting him on his bed. And just peeking out from under his pillow, we see that note. So some kind of rehabilitation treatment, some kind of shock treatment, some kind of mind control treatment, something they're trying to do to break Bishop is my guess. And the warden doesn't seem happy about doing it, but apparently just knows it's necessary based on what he just watched Bishop do all day. Ask too many questions, just like B said, you know, you either need to ask the right people, stop asking them so loudly. You're putting yourself in danger. You're endangering everybody. You know, like Beast is saying, keep your head down, fight when necessary, show them strength, but show them that you're going to stay within the rules. All Bishop has showed them is that he's going to keep pushing and keep looking for answers. And I think that's the wrong way to go. So we know eventually he's got to find a way to break out. He's got to find a way to regain his memories. It seems like there's some possibility here between Danny Moonstar and Polaris. Maybe they can recruit some others to come over to their side. But Bishop's in a bad way right now. He's against everybody. He has no friends here. Again, you know, it's like there's a reason when a cop goes to prison or jail, they're in, you know, a segregated spot. They don't put them in with the general population, because those people tend not to like law enforcement, and it's the same here. So it's a good story, but we're still more in the a lot of questions, not a lot of answers storyline. And Bishop still seems like he's back on his heels. He's not that brash, punch first, ask questions later kind of guy. In fact, he's kind of on the other extreme, where he's not fighting, at least not physically. He's more into the asking questions. He's more into the investigating right now. So I kind of like that take. I think it's a smart take. I think it accurately reflects who Bishop should be, more of a thinking man soldier rather than a hothead like he was when he first showed up. So I like how he's matured over time, but very curious to see what happens next. I have a feeling issue 3 is going to start. We're going to start to see a turning point, because up till now, like I said, it's a lot more questions than answers. So I think it's written very well by Vita Ayala. She gives Bishop an authenticity and a voice that I really like, sort of a wisdom that I haven't seen a lot of other writers bring to him. And it makes a lot of sense, being that he's from the future and the things that he's had to deal with and that he's gone through, that he would kind of have that quieter inner strength. The art by Herman Peralta is pretty solid. It's not his best work. You know, he's doing the Maestro series right now with Peter David, and I think that work is superior to this. But, you know, this was a couple of years ago, so it's definitely solid. He handles the action scenes especially well, and I like his transitions from panel to panel. They're done very well also. So all in all, the art is pretty spectacular. Colors are great. Angles on art are great. Backgrounds are a little light as well, but it works for what we're doing here. Those are usually in the fights where you're focused on the character movement and poses anyway. But yeah, if I had any nitpick, it would be like to see a little more detail in the background. But again, it's a minor quibble. So I think that's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank everybody for listening. We want to wish you happy holidays, Merry Christmas. Hope you're all being safe. Hope you're enjoying all these wonderful 12 days of the Comic Source episodes we're putting out for you to celebrate the holidays and give back to all of you who have supported us all year. So again, we really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.